Island is doing now, getting Cora to all the four corners of the world. Get a glance around the room, I see former students, former children of classmates, I see parents of students, parents of classmates. So, Baruch Hashem, it's a wonderful group, and I thank you for inviting me to address this. So who's not interested in finding a good marriage? That was my original title. I said, wait a second, what about people already married? So I end the word maintaining, finding and maintaining a good marriage. Okay, so what do you want to hear from me? Go to eHarmony and see the little sheer there, and then everyone had their ideas about what to do. So I thought that to lend some messages from Mamre Chazal, from Midrashim, from Pesukim and Tanakh, from stories in the Torah, where I dare say that probably everyone in the room knows all everything I'm going to say, every medrash I'm going to quote. It's just that I'm going to tweak it in a certain way that perhaps can actually help us with the title, using the mind and the heart in finding and maintaining a good marriage. Because most people think a good marriage starts in the heart, and it will stay there, and it will, if I have the emotion of the love, then everything will be fine, and it will solve every problem. Any problem that exists with children, with finances, with any issue that may come up. And I'd like to show from these sources that while it's certainly important to have passion and the heart must be there, that the mind must be there first. Love is not blind. Infatuation is blind. Love needs to be profoundly, profoundly informed. Love needs to be knowledgeable. That's why the first word for love in the Torah is, think of it, Vayeda Adam Eschava Ishto. It has to be an understanding, a knowledge. It has to be I don't think that Adam's eyes wandered, and I don't think that he was interested in anyone but Chava, but still, it has to be an intellectual understanding that this can work. And the first story, perhaps, in Sefer Bereishis, there are a few matches that are made, and it's quite obvious that one sets himself up. He didn't call his parents, he didn't ask anything, he was told by his parents, go up there and get married, but he made the deal himself. He fell in love, at first sight, Mamish, Yaakov, with Rachel, and he made the deal himself of how to assure that he would be able to marry her. And this is a type of romantic love that we see, I think, less and less these days with kids coming back from yeshiva, and they're told that you should not associate with members of the opposite gender, just be set up by someone. And even in my day, I'm just in my 40s, it was not that way. And I observed someone in a totally kosher and firm environment, and I was able to fall in love with someone, and observe that person over time, and raise the gumption after some time to say, what are you doing the next Thursday, or something like that. So none of this happens now. 40-year-olds are calling me up after the first date to find if she was interested in the second date. It's a problem. We lost a certain gumption that Yaakov represents. I don't mean to say I don't mean to judge this, because the generation before this, the shidduch was set up. Yitzchak did absolutely nothing in the arrangement to marry Rivka. I know that I remember speaking with Rabbi Tendler, and I'm not sure if it was a third speaker that night, at a inaugural lecture for the program called End the Madness. It was back about 10 years. And the madness was to move away from some of the systems I just mentioned. And I think that what is madness is to assume that any one thing works for all people. I have two married daughters, and the arrangement was different for each one, depending on how you know your children. So to say that there has to be one model for everyone is itself madness. The Sefer Bereishis is the proof. Yitzchak is set up, and Yaakov isn't. So Yaakov might have had a more romantic love, let's say, that before the marriage he fell in love with someone. But Yitzchak, we're told, he didn't fall in love with Rivka until after they were living together. Right? So for someone to say it's impossible to fall in love before you're married, now, I mean, I, think that every person has to know their own child. The Gemara says that we have to do a number of things for our children. We have to teach them how to make a living, teach the Torah, teach them how to swim, we need to protect themselves from the elements, and how to get married. So what does that one mean? You teach your child how to get married. So the time to teach a child how to get married is not when they're 27 or 23 or thinking of moving to the west side. The time to teach a child how to get married is when they're 3. When they're 3, to see how a loving couple talks at the dining room table. To see that if there is conflict, that it's possible for children to see conflict and possibly learn how to resolve conflict. My position is, although I don't recall, can I know, I'm just 28 years of marriage, how can you have a crossword with someone you love? You disagree in a way that's menschlich. So even if we disagree in front of the children, it's going to be okay. But two, how many times do you see the children at 5 years old here screaming at each other? So that child grows up in a home where they figure that that's the way it's supposed to be, and it's hard for them to trust when they get older. I've had many cases of couples who the wife says, he doesn't love me. I don't have to get out of this relationship. He doesn't love me. And if you just ask the background, what were your parents like and what were his parents like, immediately she began to knew she was marrying, she knew her in-laws, but the in-laws didn't fight in front of her, but they always fought in front of him. So while her parents always went out after dinner from taking a walk holding hands and they lived in the suburbs, so that's what she saw loving people do. He never saw his parents say a kind word to each other. Certainly he didn't see it. So they had the same love for each other, but he expressed it in a different way. So as soon as she realized that she felt about, that he felt about her the way she feels about him, it's just that she had to speak to him about how to express that the way she wanted, it was a whole different relationship. Baruch Hashem, remember it was 20 years ago, early in the marriage that she was thinking of breaking it. And her, they have 6 kids now, and they've just long ago moved on from the west side. But Baruch Hashem, just by understanding the difference in the background, they were able to explain away that what she saw as a discrepancy in the love. So this is what loving parents have to do. And this is actually, if you want to look this up, in the Tshuva of Rav Moshe Sternbach. He has in his first volume, a Tshuva on how we perform that fourth task of teaching our children how to get married. Teaching them to trust, teaching them to believe in marriage, teaching them how a loving couple talks. So this is where I would like to turn now into the story of Rivka. Now, what we're about to discuss is a lot of drash in this, and I think even Rashi, who cites the drash, I think often has a deeper intention in the drash than the literal meaning of the drash. This is an obvious point. Rashi makes it himself quite often, and it's certainly the opinion of Chazal. A makshiv agada, says the Yerushalmi and the Sefer Peah, to teach that when an agada says something that is not only remote from the text, but remote from logic, you have to see a much deeper meaning, and I'm going to try to render that from this drash. In that story of making the shidduch for Yitzchak with Rivka, it says that there were women that were going down to the well, that's where the swords begin. Source number one. Okay? And he makes a deal with God. Says, the girl I asked for water, and she says, she saved the gam of Malecha, Ashke, for you, and I'll give to your camels as well. That's the one that will be good for Yitzchak. Okay, whether this was a good test or a bad test, the Gemara in the beginning of Tainus says this was a big mistake, the Gemara in Chulin says that this smacks of Nichush, whatever it is, he was successful, as we all know. But this was his deal. So then, doesn't say in a young girl, it just quotes her name right off the bat, as if though we know her, right? We know her family. And this girl named Rivka comes out, and she has a jug of water. She filled her jug. He ran to her. He said, please more. So this begs a question. You said to God a deal, the one who gives me and my camels water will be the wife of Israel. What would you think the deal should be? So there's a well with 30 women. There's a well with about 30 women, and he makes a deal. But one of these 30, after I ask, gives me and my camels, that's the girl for Yitzhak. So what would you expect should follow? What should follow? Should walk up to the well, where all these girls are drawing water, and say, yeah, why don't you give everyone a chance? Anybody have water here? And the one of the 30 who steps forward and also offers my camels, that's the one that such a God has said. But why did he run to this one? It's not fair. He didn't give the others a chance. Right? He hit smack right into the first one. Wow. Rashi asks us this question. Why did he run to her? Now, I want you to understand what we're about to read has been mocked by Ibn Ezra. His own grandson, Rashbam, was incensed at these kind of Rashis. He said, my grandfather, what are you doing? What is your point? Don't you know that you claim to be pshat, but you're not pshat at all? What kind of parish is this, right? He ran to her because he saw the water rise out of the well into her pail. So he knew he has to run over to this one. This one's special. Let me give her the test. I'm not going to tell this. They have to go put the jug into the water with a rock in it, and it dips into the water, and then they bring it up. It's called the Lishov Mayim, right? So, first of all, Rashi didn't make this up. Rashi didn't make something. That appears in Bereshit Rabbah. But why? Why write a parish that's pshat? It's not screaming out at the text that this is why he ran to her. But the reader still wants to know, why didn't he give the others a chance? Right? Say because she was the most beautiful of all of them. Say anything, but why bring up something like this? So the first thing a student of Rashi has to do is, what is it in the text? It's circular reasoning to say, he ran to her because he saw the water rising up. So how do we know the water rose up? Because he ran to her. Right? How does Rashi know that the water rose out of the well into the pail? So here's the first lesson in Rashi. Scour the text. You don't have to do that because there are 300 commentaries to Rashi, and 200 of them tell us what the answer is. Look at the first three words on this page. The other girls went, yotzot, lishov, mayim. Right? I just described the process of lishov. Look what the pasuk says when Rivka gets the water. The next pasuk says, describes her, "Bateret ha'ayina, b'temalei kado b'toha." She filled her jug. Do you see how Rashi is working from? This is typical Rashi. What's missing from her pasuk? It just says she filled her jug. Work with me here. What's missing? It doesn't say Batishav Mayim. Like the other girls. If it had not said it by the other girls, then okay. It just says she filled her jug. But when it says by the others, they went Lishov, which means to drop something in a well and then to roll it up, like it says by Moshe and the daughters of Israel. So here, when it doesn't say that she had to do this, so Rashi learned from this that she was quite miraculous. So here's a question everybody asks, and this is our question of informed love. If he saw that she was a little menace benissim, this miracle is wrought for her, water rises out of, what's the point of the test? She's miraculous girl. Of course she's for Yitzchak. None of the other girls can do this. If you can do this, here's what I started saying before. Can I dare say that Ibn Ezra misunderstood Rashi? I read Rashi better than Ezra. Ibn Ezra quotes Rashi only twice in his parish to the Torah and didn't use Rashi. So I can't speak about Ibn Ezra, but Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, I'm sure sat on Rashi's lap and learned how to read Torah like Rashi. One is Rashbam. Why is he against this kind of Perush? Rashbam says this is a nice Perush to put in your lessons about Shidduchim from the Torah, but don't write it in the Perush that you say to Pshat. Rashi disagreed. Rashi said, my Perush is not limited to Pshat. Right? I write Shuto Shel Mikra, Ula Agoda HaMiyasheves Divrei Mikra. Therein lies the difference between Rashi and Rashbam. What is a Mikrosh and Tzorech Yishuv? What is considered a text that is difficult? Rashbam says, I don't mind that it says Lishovah by the girls and it doesn't say Lishovah by Rivka. Rashi, quintessential close reader, he nitpicks on every word, every difference. If it says Lishovah by them, if it says Lishovah by Rivka, Rivka didn't have to show off. Right? So she's miraculous. So I'm not questioning returns. Why continue with the text? The answer is that the way many commentaries read Rashi is that Rashi didn't actually believe that this happened to the well. The water rising out of the well into a pail, which is indicative of the missing word, is a symbol of the miraculous nature of a shidduch. So I'll tell us that a shidduch is like a kriyas yamsuf, right? We'll talk about more about that later. But that when everyone has in their own mind what they think they're looking for, right? I have noticed in my 25 years on the West Side that the best, and I see some people here whose children I'm not recording, the best shidduchim is where people are looking, how can I raise myself up to deserve that? Then what too many people are doing on a date is they're saying that they're testing the other person and saying, how does that person look to me? So when the water rising into the pail is denoting the miraculous nature of the shidduch, but it's something more than this. It's denoting that she's pleading, she's got everything, right? Money, she's got great looks. That's written inside. We'll find out later if she has money. But she's got everything. She's miraculous. But what is the test telling us? None of that matters. Here, it happens to be for a woman. A woman who says, you're going out with someone, and you're dating a few times. It's amazing what some of the Bali Musas say. So if you're dating someone, and they turn down someone for tzedakah, be careful. If they're cruel to an animal, be careful. See different, look into it. See further. Right? But in any event, the point is that what I'm saying here is that no matter how miraculous the relationship seems to be, everything fits in, right? And it has to be predicated on chesed. It has to be I have for you and for your enemy. No matter what else works, if it's not chesed, chesed is that which breaks down all boundaries. Chesed is a very difficult word to translate. Balas Chesed means everything will work. It means that if I bring over from home another guest, honey, of course, come on, it's going to work, it's going to be fine. Right? It means, honey, I know I said I'd be there at this time, I need an extra half hour. Right? Remember, I once saved it was an engaged couple, and he never found out what it was, but he did something that she claimed was egregious, and she was about to break up with him on a Friday night. And both of them were in shul on Friday night, and this was my drasha. I remember it so well. It was 18 years ago, Parshas Mishpat. And the Medrash says that the Torah says that if you have treif meat, you should throw it to the dog. Right? So the Gemara asks, come on, about treif meat? Let me do something. Why do I have to throw it to a dog? So dafka treif meat, not the veil or not pork, but treif meat. Treif meat that means an animal pounced on it. Tarov tarat yosef. It's a wolf pounced on this sheep, this treif. So give it to the dog. So the Gemara says, why? He gives him three answers. One of the answers is that the dog watches your sheep. So reward him when there's treif meat. Reward him. He chases away the wolves. So reward him when there's a treif. Did you give him the treif? So Meshech Chochma asks on this, what are we talking about? When there's treif meat, that's because the dog didn't do his job. If the dogs know they get treif meat, they'll call the wolves on them to attack the sheep in the back of the lines. Why are you giving the wolf this meat when he let you down? So I said, Meshech Chochma says the Torah wants to teach us an amazing lesson. Because the first thing you think of doing when someone lets you down is to get historical, not hysterical, historical. You remind children, they're very good at this. You always. they always remind themselves of the many times in the past when you did the same thing. You're always late, you're always doing this. Right? Therapists say you can tell a good marriage, not by the way they coo at each other, but the way they argue. You stick to the topic at hand. Don't bring in other things. Before you know it, you're out in the left field and right field, and you're arguing about things that aren't the issue. So children do this, spouses do this. So I said, this is what the Meshechach is saying. So when someone lets you down, no matter how much they disappoint you, and there may be a tipping point, but think back and say, yeah, he keeps doing this, but you know what? 95% of the time, he doesn't do this. And just Murphy's Law makes me stress the times when he does it, right? So instead of stressing how many times the dog let the wolf in, think of the 95% of the time where the dog is chasing the wolves away. And Dafka now, when he disappoints you, give him the trade for me. That's the message of the dog. So this couple comes down the aisle after I take a Shabbos to everyone as I walk them around. And then this couple comes down the aisle and he says, you saved our marriage. And he says, you confide in me. Well, he's about to break up with him. It's something this week. I didn't ask what it was. And he said, and they asked me to be in the Saudi Division for a second, they're winning. So, some such simple messages in Torah, the commentaries, and I think this is the message that Rashi wants to give us about the miraculous nature of Rivka. If it's miraculous, what do I need to test? So here is where the title comes in. What part of Eliezer, the servant of Avram, was touched when he saw the water or whatever it represents? His emotion, his heart. Wow! It's like a magic show. It's an aesthetic thing. It touches you. It makes your heart flutter to see such an amazing thing, right? So sima separatius, it's a miraculous thing. But he caught himself. He said, no, I can't. I'm not going to make this shidduch just on emotional connection. It's a problem because how many people are moved because of the chitzonios. All they see is the chitzonios. They don't get a chance to see the what's inside the person. Because the outside is what draws our emotion. The intellect needs to get into things and to understand something. So Eliezer may correct himself. He was probably about to go and give her the bracelets right away when he saw the water rise up, the commentaries to Rashi say. And he said, oh, no, it has to be an intellectually based connection. And that can only be made if I see that the person is a chassid. Many a good-looking hunk will never become a Baal Chesed just by his good looks. But many a Baal Chesed will begin to look much more handsome to a young woman when she sees how wonderful he is, how Baal Chesed he is. And the same is true the other way. You just have to give the person a chance. Many people don't, sit around a date, first or second date, and they don't give the person a chance. Not just scores of times, over 25 years, literally, but now hundreds of times, my wife and I have set up people who will not go on a second date, and they say, well, I don't want to. So if you can't give yourself a good reason for not going on a second date, so we don't have chemistry. How do you expect to have chemistry on the first after the first date? Right, so it's an issue. I think we should, first thing is, go on more second dates so you can get to know someone. On the first date, the emotional connection can be made already. But you need second, third, fourth, you need some more dates to try to make that bayida, to make that intellectual connection. And I prepared on these sheets a few quick sources. I want to show you that this runs throughout our history. Right? This Tosefta, source number 3, says an amazing thing. It lists in Baba Kama examples of Gnevus Das. First, Gnevus Das, everyone told you, is you cheat on the test, it's Gnevus Das. Cheat on the test, you're stealing the teacher's knowledge. The teacher thinks you know more, but you don't really know more. You're really only cheating yourself. That's called Gnevus Das. Remember, Tosefta says something amazing. This does not appear in any Gemara or in any Midrash. You hold on to your chair when you see that the example they give from the Torah, Gnevus Das, is V'chein matzinu kishehoyu Yisrael omdin lifnei har Sinai bikshu liknov das el yonah shnemar kol asher diber shev nasev nishma. What? We were raised in school to say Nasir and Ishma was the most amazing thing. The angels came to sew crowns on their heads. And this is stealing. They lied. How dare you lie and say Nasir and Ishma? How did they lie? They said, whatever you tell us, we're going to do, and we'll listen. So the great thing is that they said, we'll do before listening, right? So Tosfos, when the Gemara talks about what beautiful nature it is, asks, how does that reconcile with the medrash that God held the mountain over our heads? Do you know such a medrash? When we received the Torah, he held the mountain over our heads and said, if you receive the Torah, fine. If not, I'll bury you right here. Why would God have to coerce the Israelites into receiving the Torah if they had said, Nasa Mishnah? So Soloveitchik famously gives an answer, but this is already, it appears already in the Meshech Chachma also, that the coercion of the mountain above their heads, that is not a medrash that we have to, you can't take literally. The coercion of all the miracles they had just seen. Now again, like the miracle at the well, what relationship did the Israelites have with God at this time? It was purely emotional. It's sheer sheer. They were so bedazzled by everything they had seen in Egypt that they never made an intellectual connection with God. That would be nishma v'nasa. Let's hear it. Let's learn, and then we'll be able to do it. By saying nasa v'nishma, they were so enthralled with everything they had seen. So, but why is it Tosefta so sure that this entails k'nevas das? Take a look at the source right underneath. No one less than Rashi explains it. He added his parish to the Torah. Look, the Rochei Moon, Lashon and Menah, but some underlined in source number 4, Ketar Mo, Amru B'sina Anasa V'nishma L'shal Kala B'ku Hivtachasam V'su Egyam. When love is based first on the emotion, and I tell you, it's easy come, easy go. It was easy come to say Nasa V'nishma, to receive the Torah, and easy go 40 days later to pray to an Egyam. And everyone says, how can it, 40 days after seeing the lights and sirens at Har Sinai, make an egel? Because they said Nasa V'nishma. It was a problem. If you say Nasa V'nishma and you don't make an egel, beautiful. But when you say Nasa V'nishma and 40 days you make an egel, it teaches us that when the relationship is emotionally based, it's like an upside down triangle. It's going to tumble one way or the other. Right? The basis wasn't firm so that Bnei Yisrael could stick to it. It was intellectually based. And he said, God, we need a little time. Give us some, at that time was the 40 years in the desert, which was necessitated because they didn't have a firm footing in their relationship. So this is the mistake, is that too many people are starting their relationship with the heart, which is understood. It's the first thing you see. First, you see something on the outside. You know, I've had some shidduchim and some chastor. I've been doing sefer kedushin here too. For someone who just looked across the room and said, can someone set me up with her? That's a perfect example. I said, I tell people frontend all the time. You're standing in front of a shul, right? 800 of you. Let's do some scouting. I'm not kidding. Right? New York Magazine, 1995. What was it, the shul? In 1995, called the scene. 95th Street, the second most popular single, not Jewish single, single scene in New York City. I didn't like it. I don't want the New York Magazine to talk about the biggest singles yet. But all right, if it's a scene, don't scout for yourself, scout for someone else. Right? Rashi in next week's parasha says, Vashem Pakar is Sarah. Right? Avram prays for Avimelech. And then the next pasuk, Sarah conceives. So Rashi says, well, all these years, Sarah didn't conceive. Here she's conceiving. You know what Abraham did? He needed something. He needed his wife to conceive. And so did another person. You pray for another person, all right, do that too. Don't just pray for ourselves. All right? Pray for someone else, and that serves ourselves. Okay? So turn the page. And you see that actually Ramban explains. So Ramban explains the same give and take in sources 5 to 8. We'll just do this quickly. Hashem tells Moshe to gather up elders to help him take the Israelites out of Egypt. Right? And Hashem tells him in Pasuk Yud-Ches that they talk to them. The Shamu L'Kolecha, they'll listen to you. They're dying to listen to you. They're expecting you. Right? Your brother is there. He's gonna be your spokesperson. The Shamu L'Kolecha. What chutzpah does Moshe have in the beginning of Perek Dalet? Let's read it together. You see it? Chutzpah to say, Vayar Moshe Vayomer Vehein Lo Yamin. The chutzpah. Hashem just said, gather the people, they'll listen to you, they want to listen to you. And then he says, they won't believe me. So Rashi says, Poshut Pshat, not Poshut, was his sin, he was punished. There's nothing to say. He did wrong, Hashem punished him by showing him a snake, by turning his hand to leprosy. It's a sign that he spoke against people. Lashon Hara, these are punishments of Lashon Hara. Ibn Ezra looks for an excuse. Hashem said, V'shamu l'kol lecha. Maybe there's a difference between V'shamu l'kol lecha and V'hem lo yaminu li. I don't see that that's Rashi himself. Moshe himself said, V'lo yishma'u b'kol li. That's not an answer. Well, possibly an answer is that Hashem only said, the Zekanim will listen to me. And Moshe was talking about the masses won't listen to me. Whatever it is, Moshe seems to be misspeaking. Ramban says something else. The source of great, I don't have to say this on the outside. Ramban says that Moshe, Hashem told Moshe, listen Moshe, you're right, you have a concern. I understand what you're saying. I just told you to go and do an impossible task for one single man to take down a nation. Don't worry, I'm with you. But part of my plan is that Paro is not going to let you go. This is what he says at the end of chapter 3. The Egyptians are not going to let you go. But that's part of my plan. I know I can give them such a miracle to if I can turn the sky to be a black and white checkerboard, and then Paro look at that mountain and pick it off the ground and then dump it right on his palate. Hashem can do anything, right? So do something that will make Paro let them go right there on that day. Send my people out right now. Goodbye. Hashem said, that's not my plan. I want this to take about a year so that you'll be able to see certain things and be ready to receive my Torah afterwards. But that's my plan. Paro is not going to let you go. So at that point, this is all Ramban saying, Moshe said, but God, if Paro doesn't let us go, don't you think the people won't listen? It's exactly what happened. When Moshe first came, the people believed him. And then when they took away the straw, they made life difficult. Everyone came out and threw things at him. And they want to kill him. Remember? At the end of chapter 5. So Moshe's telling it exactly as it was. So what does Hashem tell him to do? This is Ramban. Ramban says Moshe did not sin in saying this. This is exactly what happened. When the Paro refuses me, of course the people are going to listen to me. You said so. I trust that. But when Paro refuses me, the people will no longer believe me. So what does Hashem tell him to do? Show him some miracles. Show him your hand. See that? Look what I'm ready to do for you. Show him the stick, turn into a snake. Show him water, turn into blood. Right? Show them some miracles. Nothing grand, but just to show them that someone sent you. And this is part of the plan. Tell them that this is part of the plan. Right? It's a problem, though. When Moshe first came to Bnei Israel at the end of Perek Daled, with Aaron, it says Moshe and Aaron appeared before the people. Can you feel what's going on? They appeared before the people and told them God remembered you and is going to redeem you, and they showed them all the miracles. Talk to me now. So one of you, tell me, according to the Ramban, what happened? What was the purpose of the miracles according to the Ramban? Not to show Moshe that he sinned, like Rashi says, but to show that, work with me here. Hashem sent him for, at what point in our give and take? If Bnei Israel turn on me because Paro doesn't let me go, right? Bnei Israel would feel, well, Avram always had his way with Paro, Yaakov always had his way with Paro, Yitzhak had his way with the Philistines. If a foreign king is turning against us this way, turning against one of our leaders, it must be that that's not a true Jewish leader. He's not an Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. He's an imposter. At that point, show them the miracles. But what did Moshe do? He made the relationship between the people and himself based on miracles. At first, the emotion. And Israel were emotionally attached to Paro and Moshe at the very beginning because he started showing them the miracles at the outset. Don't show the miracles now. The miracles are for afterwards. Base the relationship on an intimate knowledge of what I want to do for you. Of the mind. Engage the mind first. What is the first part of the Rambam called? First book of the Mishnah Torah. What?
Mada.
Mada. Right? So the Torah is part of a book called Mada. Right? What's the second book called? I didn't put you on the spot. Ahava. Right? The Shulchan Aruch begins with the laws that the Rambam has in the section called Ahava. To what we do to show our love of God. Brachas, davening, tzitzis, tefillin, right? The Rambam pushes that off in his Mishneh Torah. He talks first about Yisodei Torah, tshuva, deos, right? Of his Talmud Torah. Rambam is clearly showing us that we need to hone the intellect before the emotion. This is good child rearing. It's good in every aspect of whatever we do. And my the title here is saying that this is a most elementary and positive aspect of the dating process as well. It starts with good parenting. It starts with children at 3, 4, 5 years old, seeing what they can trust in, seeing the way you're supposed to talk. Right? I mean, I just know that, I look at the Kanara of two married children, and I just know that if one mother and the other, they're raised so much that a husband never raises his voice at his wife, that if I can't imagine such a thing, but if one of them would raise their voice, they should just crumble away and say, no, this can't be. Husband doesn't talk this way, right? We have to know that sometimes a person you have to be flexible with some things, that emergencies, whatever it is. But it has to be that we have a healthy balance of the mind and the heart. But that the mada, Rambam wants to tell us, has to proceed. And that will certainly make us make the right decisions. There are all sorts of issues in between. I can tell you 100 little pieces of advice over time of, I guess this should be all in the book, but the books have already been. Is that the advice of this balance between the Mada and the Ava is too often made by roommates. You come home from a date, you have to have a sixth date, and you have to make up your mind. Is it going this way, or is it going that way? And who are you talking to? You're talking to the worst person. You're talking to a roommate who him or herself is already quite jaded about this. Goes, that's what he said? Forget it, don't bum. But if you go home and talk to a parent, talk to a mentor, talk to a shpia, talk to someone who's older, more experienced, right? Talk to a parent who knows, maybe the roommate doesn't know Yehuda. He likes the person. Right? That sometimes happens too, believe it or not. Right? No matter how much you think it never happens, my friend wouldn't stab me in the back like that, it happens. All's fair in this game. So you want to talk to someone who is I'm not saying that that's right. I'm saying that that's what people think. But when you talk to a parent, you ask advice. I mean, it has to be that. That's part of the child rearing. That a child feels this is someone I can talk to about this. Never a lot of children say I can never talk to my parent about this. I can talk to my roommate about this, but I can't talk to my parent. Very often the roommate is not the right person. Invested in some way, the parent is saying, has unconditional love about this, right? So, and they will help you set the mind straight. Okay, so that's the presentation. I think that was the least of my questions. So, I'm very happy to get all started. So, if not, I have lots of questions to talk.
Maybe if you don't mind sticking around a little bit, perhaps a lot of questions.
Okay. All right. First, I want to just two more minutes. I just want to ask what you think the word shirach means. I don't know what the word means. Yes.
Actually, shachan, the word shachan means in Israel, the Hebrew state word. So I guess shirach
it's probably a recent word. Obviously, a state word hasn't been around for too many hundreds of years. But it's a recent word that is taken from what a shachan does. So, but however, the word is not, it's not a Hebrew word, nor is it a Yiddish word. It's an Aramaic word. It's actually it's a Targum Yonasan in last week's Parsha. Right? And it's a Targum Yonasan in Sefer Shoftim. It appears quite a few times in Sefer Shoftim. And you'd be amazed at what the Hebrew word is. The same similar word, it's not the exact same word, but it's similar. It's the word Sheket. Batishkot ha'aretz, ha'ro'im shana, u'shedochis ara. Last week's parasha, when the floods ended, it said shachocha. The earth went like Hamas and Melech shachocha, right? So it quieted down. The rains quieted down. What does this have to do with shiddah? So shin dalet chaf in Aramaic means to quiet down, which is is Isha. We're unsettled. We have to get this straight. You know, you see that the Baal HaTorim makes connections between words that appear very rarely in the Bible. So he says in Parshas Toldos, when Yitzchak gets married, he says, "Vayitzchak ben Rivchna bekachto es Rivka." In his taking of Rivka, he says, "A strange word, kind of bekachto es Rivka." Vayikach Yitzchak es Rivka ben. So he says that the word bekachto appears only one other time in the whole Tanakh. Get this, where Yirmiyahu was carried off in chains. So he says that marriage saves us from the bondage of being single. Get that again? Someone else might have thought, with Tommy Cheek made a different connection between the two. That marriage saves us from the bondage of being single. We're bound to ourselves. We understand that. When Hashem gives you someone to marry and someone to share, there's no greater brach, there's no greater menucha. So I'm not settled until I have that. And so this is the true meaning of what the shirach is. And the basic presentation here is that we might be going about it the wrong way. And what I started with is certainly the wrong way, is to say that there is only one way. There is no one way. Everyone has to know ourselves and know our children. Have to know our situation. So this is the Baal HaTorim's connection. Says that we are bound to ourselves and that we're born selfish. We're not born evil or anything. That's Hashem. So Yetzer Lev Adam Ravim Rav means that we're selfish. We're born needing everything. This species here in this room is the neediest species on planet Earth. None of us would have survived without someone looking after us. Really part of our life, right? So this area, we feel, we'll get it. Someone will have a crush on us. We'll learn how to talk to someone. We're running into trouble now, where I see there's so many different. I see the rainbow of different types of people. I surround the West Side, that some people just don't know how to talk. Don't know how to talk to each other. They're mean. They're maybe jaded or something. But they see at the table. They're just. You know, I think that just the first thing people just want someone who would give you water in your camels. That's the first thing that someone's looking for. Just a simple chesed, right? And you'll see, just give it a chance, you'll see how good looking he becomes shortly. You'll see how gorgeous you become too. Right? So that's hopefully that's the easiest thing to apply. But surely there must be some question here, no?
Yes, sir.
I'm going to ask this. You said I have an hour. I'll just conclude with this. I read this letter in the Knesset about 5 years ago. So the letter was precipitated by the Torah from this week's parashas. I'm going to close with this. When Avram pitches his tent, he says, Vayet Bahalo. Famously, it's spelled Aleph Hei Lamed Hei. As it goes, Vayet Bahalo. Not prepared to claim it, you might read Vayet Bahalo. It's Vayet Bahalo. But it's the Sarah spells it there. So Rashi writes very, very famous parish that whenever Avram was with Sarah, he pitched his tent, he always pitched hers first. Every day. So this is not only good advice for a couple, it's good advice for whoever you are, for man and woman. You're with someone else, you're at a restaurant, and you're pouring soda. Imagine what it means you grow up in a house and you always see this food at the table, but a husband fills the wife's plate. On Shabbos, we're at the opposite ends of a big dining room table. Kids always, she's in the kitchen, brings her, there's a plate, kids making their day. Everyone knows you have to make someone else's plate. I grew up in an house where on the Pesach Seder, they always pour it for someone else, the wine. They're being served, the chavos. But you just grow up with this, it's a simple courtesy. Right? We paskin like lovon, that Kelo Yosef came to the Kamelu, let's say Satsiru, if Nebuchadnezzar, Yaakov didn't mind marrying the younger one. It's a simple mention. You're passing my problem. Right? So, simple courtesy. That's why I always take bar bas mitzvah, boys and girls, bowling. Bowling is a profound sort of courtesy. Before you go on the wood, you have to look to your right and see if that person is. And you have to look a little to your left also, because if the person is really ahead of you, that person goes first too. Every time you get up there, it's, am I ready? So someone coming in the door as I'm walking. We teach kids all the other about haven't learned Mishon and Balei Tosfos, but we don't teach them what to do if you walk in the door and someone else is coming in from the other side. have to teach those things. So Vayet Ahalal means that he always did Fasara first. So this guy comes up to me again and says, I've got some of the stories people come after. I said this on a Friday night. So he says, you know something? I realize every morning I pray for my shidduch. I pray, God, please, when I say Modi'ani, please today present me with my bashirut. There's a woman that was set aside for me when I was 40 days old, 40 days after conception, and I would like to meet her today, please. So he said, after hearing this drasha, I'm going to change. This is the letter I read. I'm giving the paraphrase of the letter I read in the Knesset once about the courtesy. Trying to get a little muster about it. See what goes on in the Knesset session. Anyway, so this is what the gist of his letter was. I'm going to change my prayer every day, because the fact is that there's someone out there who's also looking for me. Right? So my prayer is, please God, present my basheret with her basheret. Isn't that nice spirit telling you? Right? Not from my standpoint. Because there's someone out there who's also in pain. She's waiting for me, brother. She got married. We live in Israel now. But my basheret is also looking for me. So let me say the prayer from her standpoint. Let's think of the zulas. Think of the other, and we'll find that more and more people will just be melted. It ought to be easy to fall in love. It ought to be easy to make someone fall in love with you. If we have the take some of these lessons. I have about 30 more, but maybe if anyone wants. We'll get them some other time, but hopefully we'll learn these messages of combining the heart and the mind and make the right decisions and help others make the right decisions. So.
Thank you, Rabbi Schwartz. Thank you very much for coming, and thanks for everyone for coming. Our next shiur is November 18th. It's a lunch shiur with Rabbi Tendler, and